New Orleans has been in the national spotlight over removing four city monuments, all for the lost cause of the Confederacy. These were all erected decades after the Civil War and the Reconstruction era. But long before those monuments even went up, a different monument was supposed to go up, one honoring Reconstruction's success. But that never happened. This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan Levinson. I want to introduce you to a guy named Brian Mitchell. He's an assistant professor of history at the University of Arkansas, Little Rock, and he's from New Orleans. He told me about a guy named Oscar James Dunn. Ever heard of him? Well, I hadn't either. But right around the time that this guy, Oscar Dunn, died, here's what a journalist wrote.
That there'll be three pictures that hang in the home of every African American from that day forward: Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and Oscar James Dunn.
Well, we know about Honest Abe. We know about Douglass, or most of us do, including that, you know, he's dead. But Dunn? Not so much. I wondered how Brian knew about him.
As a child, I'd spend my days after school with my great-grandmother, and she'd tell us family stories. And family stories always sort of led to important patriarchs or matriarchs in the family. And I'm a distant relative to Oscar James Dunn.
Dunn is Brian's great-great-great uncle. So his family talks about Dunn, and then Brian goes to third grade.
It was back in 1976. The teacher asked if anyone was related to anyone in Louisiana history that was famous. And I said, I'm related to Oscar James Dunn. And she said, well, who's that? And I said, well, he's the first black lieutenant governor, not just for Louisiana, but for the entire nation. And she said, there's never been a black lieutenant governor in Louisiana.
An 8-year-old Brian was like, yeah, there was. And he's my uncle. What's even crazier is that this man, Oscar James Dunn, the great-great-great uncle of Brian Mitchell, was not only the first black lieutenant governor of the United States, he was born a slave.
Dunn was born in New Orleans about 1822. He was born to a slave mother.
Dunn's mom then fell in love with a free man of color named James Dunn, who then buys her and her two kids for $800. And when Dunn turns 11, he's free.
That changes Dunn's life forever. It changes him from a slave to being a free person of color.
Now Dunn can go to school, and he's good at school. And he learns a trade, plastering, and he's good at that too. He grows up and becomes the head of the Black Masonic Lodges for Louisiana. Then the Civil War ends and Reconstruction begins.
African Americans are all over the South. They're released and people need their labor for agriculture. So he opens an office. And what he does there is write contracts for the recently released slaves so they can work on plantations and not be cheated.
Basically, Dunn tries to make sure newly freed people actually get paid for their labor through writing those contracts. And to no surprise, he's good at that too, which has people around Dunn telling him he'd make a good politician. Because people of color, mainly those who were free prior to emancipation, like Dunn, were now entering politics. So Dunn runs for office and gets elected. Nick Weldon works for the Historic New Orleans Collection. While doing research over there, he discovered Oscar Dunn.
He was a radical Republican. You know, they were the progressive party that was trying to extend civil rights to African Americans, especially in the South.
And then there were the Democrats, the ex-Confederates, and Dunn's political rivals. Nick found a quote in the New Orleans Times newspaper where local Democrats described their political opponent.
The taint of honesty and of a scrupulous regard for the official proprieties is a serious drawback and enervating reproach upon the lieutenant governor.
Translation, please.
Basically, they're like, he is so fair-minded and scrupulous that it's annoying.
Got it. His rivals couldn't help but respect him, whether they liked it or not. Dunn used this bipartisan respect to advance his career and get things done.
He became a big proponent for universal male suffrage.
You know, the right to vote.
Civil rights legislation. the integration of public schools. So he did a lot against a lot of pressure and in a pretty hostile environment.
Hostile is one way of putting it, or one could say, and may I say, it was crazy times. Things were insane. The Louisiana governor at the time was a man named Henry Warmoth, a white 20-something Republican from New York. He and Dunn were elected on the same ticket in 1868. That's 3 years after the Civil War ended. Dunn was 20 years older than Governor Warmoth. And at first, he really believed that this young Yankee wanted equality between whites and blacks. But then, the governor betrayed the lieutenant governor.
And when it actually came time for him to sign a bill that would protect blacks, he says no.
When Governor Warmoth refused to put pen to paper on a civil rights bill, it straight up divided the Republican Party. There's basically a Dunn camp and a Warmoth camp. They had separate police forces, separate conventions. These were two Louisiana Republicans who were supposedly part of the same administration, but were in direct competition.
It was complete chaos. There was no order, but Warmoth was losing his grasp.
His political grasp, his power. The Democrats, who used to be the Confederates, they won't accept Governor Warmoth because they see him as a grade A carpetbagger. And the radical Republicans, especially the African Americans, realize that Governor Warmoth is working completely against their interests. The next gubernatorial election is around the corner, and there are talks of impeaching Warmoth. Meanwhile, Dunn's career is going great. First of all, if Governor Warmoth is impeached, Dunn would become the first black governor ever. And on top of that, rumors are flying that the president of the United States, Ulysses S. Grant, is considering Dunn for vice president. And then, in November of 1871, Dunn goes to a dinner. You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. Here's Brian Mitchell again, the descendant of Oscar Dunn.
There is a public dinner that he's invited to, and thereafter he becomes very sick. And there is speculation that he may have been, as they say, dosed at that particular dinner.
Dosed. Nick Weldon.
It was after a dinner, and sudden violent illness, vomiting, you know, unconsciousness, and...
Dunn calls a couple of his close friends in. And 2 days later,
he died, and it was a shock to the city. The official cause of death was congestion of the brain and lungs, I believe.
Meaning Oscar Dunn died of natural causes. But there were plenty of people that simply said, that's not what happened. They looked at Dunn's death, and they saw one thing, poison.
Some of the symptoms of arsenic poisoning were similar with him, the vomiting, the shivering and all of these things, and a number of doctors wouldn't sign the official medical examiner's report.
In fact, 4 out of 7 doctors who examined Dunn refused to sign off on him dying of natural causes. They suspected murder. But the family refused an autopsy.
So that was that.
Here's Brian Mitchell.
We really just don't know what happened to Dunn. We don't know if he died of natural causes, for whether he had been poisoned by a rival political camp. But there hasn't been any definitive proof, and there have been a number of papers written on Dunn's death. There have probably been more papers written on Dunn's death than Dunn's life.
So Dunn is dead at the age of 49 in 1871, at the peak of his political career. With a country in shock, people show up to pay their respects.
There were over 50,000 people that turned out for his funeral. The composition of the crowd was made up of every facet of New Orleans society, black and white.
Including most of Dunn's political rivals, the men who potentially poisoned him. And Governor Warmoth, of all people, was a pallbearer.
It's called the largest funeral in New Orleans history. And I always point out that it's probably one of the oldest second lines in New Orleans history. There are jazz bands that are there.
The second line stretched a mile long from the intersection of Claiborne and Canal, where Dunn's house was, to Magazine Street, and then proceeded to the St. Louis No. 2 Cemetery.
Yeah, to say he was well-loved in the city would have been an understatement.
Which brings us back to that monument, the one I mentioned in the beginning of this story. Remember the monument that never happened? Yeah, that was meant for Oscar Dunn.
The Louisiana legislature passed an act, and it says here, this is from 1873, Act No. 57, to incorporate the O.J. Dunn, Oscar James Dunn, Monumental Association of Louisiana.
That's Nick Weldon again from the Historic New Orleans Collection. The Louisiana State Legislature dedicated $10,000 to Dunn's monument, which was a lot of money back then, like a couple hundred G's in today's money. But money never spent.
I do not know where the opposition came from. I do not know why the monument was not erected. All I know is that it isn't there.
So mystery number one, dude dies unexpectedly. Mystery number two, monument signed by the governor of Louisiana and $10,000 allotted for the erection of this monument does not happen.
That's correct.
While people were literally writing legislation to memorialize Dunn in this monument, Brian says there's another movement happening to discredit Dunn. He found an old drawing from that time of a Mardi Gras ball held by the crew of Comus.
They had an elaborate ball, and in the center of the ball, the king dressed as an ape, a giant ape.
It was a massive gorilla costume that the king of Comus wore, saying the first black lieutenant governor of Louisiana was an ape.
I argue that it's at that point that revisionists start trying to take over the narrative and rewrite Dunn as a villain instead of a hero in American history.
And Nick says that has a really fast domino effect.
When you see this somewhat rising African-American political star at a time of all this strife, the guy dies. And pretty much with him was all of the gains that he had fought for, civil rights, suffrage, integration in public schools. I mean, all that stuff, you know, with the pullback of Reconstruction started to go away after that. At the same time, the Ku Klux Klan is just getting started. The White League is just getting started.
So by taking down Dunn, they were able to reinforce notions of black inferiority in Louisiana.
So 20 years after Dunn dies, instead of building a monument for a former slave who was on his way to being Veep, the Liberty Place monument goes up to honor an attack by a white supremacist group, the Crescent City White League, against an integrated police force.
All of this progress that was made gets immediately wiped off the slate. You have the stories of these people wiped off the slate too.
So 100 years after Dunn dies, his descendant, Brian Mitchell, goes to elementary school in New Orleans, and his teacher tells him that Louisiana never had a black lieutenant governor.
My entire life, I went to classes and I loved history, and I heard about Manifest Destiny, and I heard about melting pots, and none of these things seemed to explain my condition as an African American in the United States. But Dunn did.
Do you think, you know, if the monument had been erected, if there was an Oscar Dunn monument, that more people would know who that man was?
Most certainly, most certainly.
Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies at UNO. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music and to the entire Tripod editorial committee. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. You can hear Tripod whenever you want if you subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also find us on social media at Tripod NOLA. Check out the podcast. There's going to be a Tripod Extra coming up of my extended interview with Brian Mitchell. There's so much about Oscar Dunn and his life and his death that we could not fit into this story. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll tripod you later.